objectives.
Oh, okay.
Working out of the same building on the same equipment. It created problems. It was not a wise decision.
Okay, yeah.
Be careless and let those little devils breed.
Okay, back to Mega Diamond then. What happened when were all three of those entities still formed when Tracy gave up his shares to David?
Tracy didn't give up any shares to David, or at least a very small amount.
Okay.
In the business, originally Tracy had 51% of the entity, and sometime later, he said for tax purposes, he also said for other reasons, other people, I'm not sure what the reason was, but anyway, he decided he would have a more advantageous tax position if he dropped back to being owning less than 25% of the company. And so he turned about 26% of his ownership back to the treasury, not realizing that this made him an owner of 33% of the outstanding stock. And so he gave up control of the corporation without achieving his tax objective, at least. But anyway, he dropped back to a third ownership. Go back further, there's information that may be helpful to you.
Great.
After we formed the first entity, Bill and I were novices. We knew nothing about high pressure. Tracy was the man. And we rather expected that Tracy would, at least I expected that Tracy would carry the brunt of the leadership and teach Bill and I as fast as he could so he could shed responsibility to us. But after a fairly short time, maybe a year, maybe two, Tracy, I guess, got discouraged with the business. He never even commented. I didn't interpret by his actions what went on, but he got discouraged. During this early part, he had designed our first production press, a big 1,200-ton press, had it built back by McCartney Manufacturing in Kansas. And he looked after the construction of the press, looked after it until it was brought back and set up in our building. And at that point, he essentially walked away from it.
Okay.
I was taking the lead in operating the press. And by that time, I'd operated some of the small presses that were on campus. Knew a little bit about it, not a lot, but a little bit. We had something like a dozen anvils, which is the key component that delivers the high pressure in the press. And I ran a calibration, ran the business transition, which is about 25 kilobars, whereas to produce diamonds, which is our objective, you needed the order 55 or 60.
Okay.
So ran the bismuth transition, worked fine. I then tried to run the barium transition, which is 55 kilobars, and got somewhere near there, and all six anvils crunched, which was half of our inventory. I talked to Bill and Dave about Bill and Tracy about it, and neither of them haven't had much to say except maybe this is a sport, and an accident. Better try it again. So I tried with the other six, and they crunched.
Do you remember about what year this was?
Probably 68, 69, something like that. And I anticipated that Tracy would step in and bring his expertise to the forefront and solve this problem. It was only one of our problems. One, we couldn't deliver the pressure. The other, we were out of money. Bill rounded up an investor, Dick Stratford, so he provided money to do more carbide, but there's not much purpose in doing it the same as it was. And Tracy essentially, for whatever reason, he lost interest in solving the problem, so it was up to me. And ultimately, I talked to other people on campus. They really, in their own way, they solved the problem. I didn't, because the design was over-optimistic. It was way under-designed for being able to tolerate the pressure. So I took a design that was somewhat more conservative, and it worked. And so with that, with smaller faces on the anvils, we were able to produce diamond. About that time, I think Dick Stratford found a guy down in California who would buy diamond grit, and so we moved into production on diamond grit. We were very secretive about it because we were not really clear on the patent picture. When we went into it, Tracy was really pretty cavalier about patents. He was the holder of the multi-anvil press patents,
okay,
or at least the university was. He didn't figure they were going to trouble us. However, the process patents, which were the result of his genius, really, his work at GE, were really well done by GE, and they had the field covered. We thought we had a possible argument as to why we were not violating the patents. In retrospect, we were, I think. I'm not a lawyer, but I think we were. But anyway, we kept a low profile and we proceeded to sell diamond grit through Lewis Worms down in Los Angeles. And that pretty thriving business for a few years until the patents ran out. Now this was the Dion DBT side of the business was doing fine. But when the patents ran out, we were getting a dollar and a half a carat for our grit. And in the course of over about a 2-year period of time, the price ran down to 35 cents a carat. GE and De Beers, who dominated the market, had no intention of permitting competition in the market. And so the technical specifications of the product were well defined. Customers knew what they wanted, and we had to meet the spec. We couldn't offer a different product. All we could offer is price. They would not permit us to undercut them on price. If we dropped the price, they'd drop it.
Oh, okay.
And they ran it right down.
Do you remember what years this was?
Oh, gosh. I'll guess 73.
Okay.
But,
great,
it
thanks.
Dropped.
Okay.
During this time, Mega Diamond, which was the company that was going to exploit Tracy's development of a polycrystalline diamond, and the company in which the Jollis brothers had interest, proceeded to try and develop and market a product. However, at the same time we were trying to develop and market a product, GE was introducing a superior product. And we were not really clear on it. We didn't do a good job at all of comparing the product. And so we wasted a lot of money on developing inventory that we couldn't sell. This was at the instigation of the Jollis brothers and the manager at the time. We fought against it, but we were outvoted. So we made a big inventory of stuff that we couldn't ultimately sell. And the company was really kind of floundering. And that would about been about the time that David came back. He had been at school and working for Ingersoll Rand. He came back to Provo, decided to work on his own and develop a downhole drill, is what I remember. As the time had progressed from maybe late 60s, early 70s, Tracy had not only backed out technologically from the company, but it backed out from a managerial perspective. The three of us, any two who agreed, could drive the course of the company. Bill and I saw things much, much differently. And Tracy wasn't interested in casting a defining vote. He just backed out of it. And so he left Bill and I without control, having to control. And we butted heads. And I don't handle confrontation well. I didn't manage my part very well, and Bill didn't manage his very well either, for that matter. And Tracy didn't manage his very well. So while we were butting heads, trying to figure out what in the world to do, Dave came back, and he thought he could see that his dad was ignoring a fairly significant asset. And in essence, he got his dad's blessing to decide where to go and what to do. So Dave talked with Bill. He talked with me. He felt more comfortable about where the direction I thought the company should go in. And so he joined me in trying to set a direction for the company. And about this time, we brought all the companies back together under one entity, which should have never ceased being. And along the way, DBT had acquired a company called Supercut that made grinding wheels back in Chicago, managed by a fellow named Art Frigo, had a 10% stake in Supercut. And Dave and I proposed that we combine all the companies and we make Art Frigo manager of it. Bill thought Art Frigo was a fine manager until he found out that he was going to be supplanted. Bill was president of Mega Diamond. Now let's see, he was president of everything, I think, at the time.
Okay.
When we were going to combine, we were going to combine the DBT, the Dion, the Jollis Brothers, Supercut into one entity and have Art run it. Bill found this totally unacceptable. And I'm a little hazy on when what happened in this, but anyway, we kicked Bill out as president, and he rejected. He became an opponent of having Art run the system. And by default, one of the minority holders, but a swing holder, was Doug Thompson. He said, "Well, Dave, looks like it's your baby then." And so Dave assumed presidency of the Diamond Grit part of the operation. Lewis Pope had been general manager operating under his dad for the Diamond Grid operation, and in essence Dave replaced Lewis. And Bill retained president of Mega Diamond, so you can imagine what a wonderful atmosphere there was in the building. Lewis split off went off, and he's ticked about it, decided that he'd set up his own company, which he proceeded to do, U.S. Synthetics. So Bill was supporting Lewis while president of Mega Diamond operating in the building. It was a very strange set of affairs, and as soon as we found out that Lewis was setting up a company, we felt he was, in essence, just taking the technology that was belonged to DBT and using it for his own good, and we sued. Bill then countersued us for the way we had been replaced as manager. After a brief period of time, his lawyers advised him that his position was untenable to be president of one company operating in the building and then suing people in the building in support of his son developing the building's elsewhere. I don't remember the convolutions, but somehow we brought Mega Diamond and Dion DBT, whatever it was, back together. I don't remember how the management structure went now. I have to think about it.
Well, that's fine.
But the Jollis brothers brought us a French company, Fujima, who was interested in acquiring high pressure technology. So we negotiated a sale and we sold the technology package to them for $5 million, which we promptly consumed.
So what's a technology package? Was that like apparatuses, presses, or was that just
It was presses,
knowledge?
Presses and technology and operating. And we built several presses for them. We built supporting equipment. Dave managed the transfer.
Oh, okay.
We built presses. We brought their engineers over. We trained them. We shipped things over, helped them set it up in a plant near Grenoble in France.
Okay.
And we used the money to intensify our R&D. Dave was very aggressive and encouraged us and took the lead in developing new technology. And, and somewhere along in here, I guess Art Friegel helped us negotiate the sale to Fujima, but he was getting bad vibes about the whole thing. And so he wanted out, and he wanted to take Supercut with him. It was his perspective that he brought Supercut to the group. He was entitled to take it with him when he went. And we didn't see much future in the grid operation. This is a time when we were breaking even or even losing money on manufacturing grid. So we saw no future in it. It turned out to be really an impossible thing to sell grid to Supercut's competitors. The original plan is that Supercut would take our output and put it in wheels, and we get the synergy of that integration. But it turned out they couldn't use the bulk of what we made, and so it was going into idle inventory. And so they weren't much of an asset to us. They were making more money than we were. So that company was making more money than DBT was, but that wasn't much.
Oh, okay.
So Art wanted out. We wanted to combine both operations into one. And I'm unclear as to why I ended up being president rather than Dave. I think some of the significant shareholders were prepared to support me where they weren't prepared to support Dave.
Do you remember what year that was?
Early 80s.
Okay.
Possibly even 1980. But anyway, I became president then. and you'll notice a total lack of discussion of Tracy through this thing. He just handed it over to Dave and did his own thing. Tracy liked to build and sell presses, and it was, so that's what he did, and this caused a little bit of friction because he made the first presses, and he did a very good job at it, but he was inexperienced in issues that might come up with long-term usage of the machine. And we ran into problems which we solved, and he was taking the solutions that we had developed and putting on all his presses, which he was selling. This didn't warm our hearts very much. I don't think we ever said a whole lot about it because we recognized Tracy's inventiveness, his skill, his genius, the value of his name. We didn't want to antagonize him, and so we gritted our teeth and put up with it. I expect he was gritting his teeth over a lot of what we were doing, so it probably went two ways. Anyway, we proceeded to develop new polycrystalline products. Dave was the leader in this. He was the creative force. But Dave and I began to not see things the same way.
Okay.
And we were struggling. We were now beginning to sell products again that were like the ones GE and De Beers were selling. And we were in competition with them while we developed independent products. Again, we were running into the troubles in going head-to-head competition with GE and De Beers. And I concluded that this was a losing strategy, that we would be far better off if we could find a partner who would use our product, and if they owned us, or we owned them, then there'd be a common interest. And so one would have a captive supplier, the other would have a captive customer. So I began to look around for possible buyers and became aware that Smith represented a really good opportunity. We started to develop Smith as a purchaser. At the same time we're developing, the Dave was developing products especially for them. The French got wind of this and they wanted to buy us. And then National Lead Pipe Log got wind of it and approached us, and they were interested in buying us. The pivotal shareholders pretty much relied on myself and my judgment on where to go. I didn't want to sell the company to the French because I didn't feel comfortable about their business plan. Their business plan was to sell in competition with GE and De Beers.
Oh, okay.
I didn't think it was a good business strategy. Now they were, Fukushima is the French nuclear energy company. They are big, they're very profitable. They build and run, I think they build possibly run the nuclear power plants in France. They process uranium, they sell uranium, they mine it. This investment is nothing for them. So they could have poured unlimited money into the whole thing. But I didn't think they would. And I didn't really want to commit the future of the company and the employees to their tender care. My brother was working with us, and I had perhaps special incentive to see to it I didn't leave him hanging.
Oh, okay.
National Lead crafted a very nice proposal. They would have paid us 10 to 20% premium over what Smith was prepared to pay, but the deal had to be approved by their board. we could negotiate one, and then they'd take it to the board for approval. We had about consumed the money we got from the sale of Kojima, or to Kojima. We all of a sudden got hit by a summons from GE. They were launching a suit against us for patent violations. And we were, we would have lost that big time, but they offered to sell us the right for $500,000. And about this time, Dave had become unhappy with the fact, I don't know if he thought it was himself or himself and his family, him on that. He felt they were not getting the fair share out of the whole thing. So we had a unpleasant discussion, and things were getting down to brass tacks. We were losing money. We consumed our money. We were way down the track towards making a sale. If we were to not make the sale, I would have had to personally carry the company for several months through its losses until we found an alternative. I was already carrying it for the bank had cut off our credit. In essence, every time a payable came in, they took the money, but they didn't loan us any more in return. So I was having to carry the company for the last two or three months at tune of about $89,000 or $90,000 a month. So I was feeling considerable pressure to close the deal. I could have fired Dave and said, okay, you won't support the sale, which is what he was threatening not to do. Go do your own thing then. And I'll lose, so will your family lose. We'll see what comes of it. I thought this would be the old proverbial cutting off my nose to spite my face, and so he and I negotiated where he would get a share of the sale. And then we proceeded with the sale. We negotiated with Smith where we took $250,000 less on the purchase price. They picked up $250,000 share of the patent fee, and we purchased the royalty rights from GE. Then we consummated the sale of the company, and going in, I rather anticipated that my tenure would be brief. It was about a year, after about a year, then I was relieved of the presidency. But during all this time, although we had negotiated terms where Dave got a share of the sale, we didn't find a way to find a harmonious management approach. So he and I continued to butt heads through that year. And, so they were a big part of the reason they brought in a replacement. So they needed someone who wasn't involved in the fray just to sort things out and move the company forward. David used the proceeds from the sale to launch Novatech or one of its variations, and he became less and less involved in the Mega Diamond and eventually spent all his time developing Novatech. I was set at liberty, and after a little bit I did other things in a high pressure field, and then I expect Dave can tell you what happened with Novatech. Going back to when Bill resigned, he worked with Lewis, and eventually they made a very nice success out of U.S. Synthetic.
Yes.
After Dave went on his way to Novatech, I think Tracy did whatever high pressure work he did with Dave. I don't think he did any more with Megadiamond. I don't remember exactly when Tracy Jr. Left and went to work with Dave. Probably about the same time I left. Probably we all left our involvement about the same time. But that, when Tracy left, he focused quite heavily on something that had always been a burr under his saddle. He felt that he was never given proper credit for the invention of the process and the equipment. I had the opportunity to talk with the other men of the team independently in the course of time. I each asked each, you know, what's your perception of what happened? And I thought Dr. Bundy perhaps described it best and told what I think is the best view of what happened. He said, of course it was a team effort. We met daily, speaking of the four members, Tracy, Dr. Strong, Dr. Bundy, and Wentorf. But we met daily to review what was going. Now, we each had our own phase of the operation we were managing. And we just critiqued each other's ideas, made suggestions. Said, and so we all knew what each other were doing. We all made suggestions to what the other was doing. And said, there's no question about it. Tracy's hands were at the controls when the first diamonds were made. His success was the result of a collaborative effort. I think that's probably the case, that they all contributed in a big way. I think Tracy had particular insight and genius, and perhaps contributed more than the others in the team, but it was a team effort, I think. In fact, Dr. Bundy said that Strong made diamonds earlier. He said he's absolutely convinced, there's no question in my mind, that Strong made diamonds first, that they couldn't reproduce it. And if you can't reproduce it, then it doesn't count. So Tracy made the first diamonds. He was the leader on that phase of the operation. He said he did a fine job, and very, very good, very competent man. The General Electric, I think very foolishly, I wanted the credit to go to General Electric rather than Tracy. And so they promoted it excessively as a team effort, rather than being Tracy Hall and the team, which is what I think they should have done. It was the team that did it.
Well, yeah, they could have done it that way. It would have been good for everybody.
It would have been better.
Maybe it would have been better.
And had they done it that, there's every chance they could have gotten a Nobel Prize for Tracy. They done it by distributing the credit, they diffused it, and I'm not sure they ever tried particularly, but I think they could have, and they would have been smart too, but they didn't. And Tracy always felt underappreciated, and he wanted credit from the engineering and science committee community that he felt he didn't get. He was aggravated by the fact that the Swedes, shortly after General Electric announced the success, the Swedes came out and said, well, we did it too, but we didn't think it was very important, so we didn't tell anybody, because in fact we did it a year before Tracy did.
Maybe they did.
Well, yeah, I don't know. They tell a plausible story, but it muddied the water further, and so They're saying, well, we did it first. We just didn't tell anybody. GE was saying the team did it, and yeah, Tracy was part of the team. And this rankled him. It was very, very hard, and he spent a lot of time, or mental effort at least, in trying to right what he felt was wrong. I don't know what he did in terms of his actions and calls and whatever, but I know it rankled and it was a big thing in his mind.
So even in 1972, he received an award for creative invention from the ACS. Right. Maybe it was for something else, but I have a feeling was that not even the recognition that
if I remember rightly, they analyzed it like this, that Tracy's name was on the patent for the equipment that made the diamonds. Tracy and Tracy's alone. Other people's name were on some of the process patents. It was kind of fuzzy, but they said without the equipment, diamonds would not have been weighed. With the equipment, diamonds were a certainty.
Oh, okay.
It was only a matter of time. And so that being the case, the man who developed the equipment really was responsible for the invention. And they gave him the credit. But De Beers, in essence, supported the Swedish position. And I guess the Russians probably came in there and claimed they did it first too. But I don't think anybody paid much attention to them. but Tracy needed more than that. I'm not sure. He was a complex man, not always easy to understand. A very humble, very capable man, honest, very no malice in his heart. That wrangled on him, and he spent a lot of energy trying to get that rectified.
Well, great. So where did you grow up, and how did you get into high pressure?
I grew up in Murray, Utah, boy.
Okay.
I got my PhD in the combustion field. I went down to China Lake, California, working on the Poseidon program. But I went down to build resumes so I could come back to Utah. That's where I wanted to be. There was an opening at BYU. I came back in a minute.
So you got your PhD from BYU?
From U.
Oh, from
U. I came back as a professor to BYU. Came back in 63.
And that's the year you met Tracy?
My involvement in pressure came from Tracy. He was my teacher. He was my mentor. And when we decided to make a company, then he took us downstairs and set us on, up on the Tet Prius to make a run and make diamonds. I think both my run and Bill's failed, and Tracy's run succeeded. It was a mixed demonstration, but...
So that was that the day you guys decided to form your company? Or he showed you how to make diamond?
It wasn't the same day.
But it was after though, huh?
Yeah, it was after, but not long after.
Oh, that's a fun story.
We decided this would have been late December, early January, late December 65, early January 66, we decided to proceed. But then we had some messing around. How do you establish a corporation? What's required? And ultimately, on April 6th in 66 is when we incorporated the company. But by that time, Tracy would have shown us how to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and then you were relieved of your duties at Mega Diamond. Did you come straight here?
No, I went after a few months. I became a consultant for a company back east called Tempo. I don't remember what else was Temple, but it was the fellow there who had a piston and cylinder apparatus, and he was a promoter. He was promoting all kinds of unscientific possibilities with the apparatus. He was using me for whatever contacts and prestige I had in the field. I was using them to keep him to keep myself active in the field and visible.
Oh, okay.
So we were each using the other. After I consulted for them for about a year, Norton Company had a diamond tech center in Salt Lake. They owned Christensen Diamond.
Okay.
And I was hired to manage the tech center. And this would have been about 1990. I left Mega Diamond in, 87, something like that. 87, 88, I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
After a few years, Norton decided to bring the research operation back to Worcester, Massachusetts. And it was a foolish venture. It was not going to be satisfactory, and I wanted no part of it. I wouldn't go back. So they moved such portion as they could back, and they had been producing the tungsten coatings for Christensen, and they're just going to walk away and leave Christensen hanging. They approached myself about the possibility of setting up a company to do the coatings, since I was going to be at loose ends, and my son also was going to be at loose ends. We thought he'd be interested, so we set up a company to supply Christensen, and that's kept us busy ever since.
Huh. Oh, that's cool. So how'd you get the name? What is it? What's significant about Siva? Is it Siva?
Siva started out as a land development, land and building construction company in a venture in Spanish Fork. It stood for Sierra Vista, which was the development. It went. It taught me fairly soon that you'd be a lot of good things, but you also better be good at development if you're going to do development, and I wasn't. So I got my fingers burned and got out of that involvement, but I kept the corporation that was involved. I kept the name alive.
Oh, okay.
So I had, in essence, a dummy name to use when the time came to need a company. So we had all set up and just used the assets to move into this business.
Okay. Well, Dwayne, I really appreciate it. You've spent a lot of time with me.
Well, I've given you some perspectives you'll have an interesting time sorting out. Have you talked with Bill?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Yep, I'm going to talk to Bill.
Good. Bill said once, and he put it very, very well, he said, had there not been a Bill Pope, there would have been no Mega Diamond. Had there been no Tracy Hall, there would have been no Mega Diamond. Had there been no Dwayne Horton, there would have been no Mega Diamond. It's really, really true. We each contributed, but we didn't have a satisfactory working relationship and vision of the future. We originally said we're going to build a company that has maybe 8 or 9 employees.
Oh.
You know, this little thing. And fairly quickly, we strayed from that vision, but we never found a substitute, a common vision for it. I would give Bill credit for the business side, and particularly for the promotional side. He kept us in funds when we would have died otherwise. Tracy provided the technological platform to work from, and I rolled up my sleeves and developed that platform so we had something to produce with. That's how I would say it in hindsight. But there are forces involved that we didn't cope with very well. I don't think any of us did very well. I think we all should be ashamed of how we comported ourselves. course, you couldn't talk with Tracy. You talked with Dave, I'm sure.
Dave's overseeing the whole project. He's wanting me to make sure I talk to everybody. So I'm turning this stuff over to a professional writer, you know, and I manage writers and designers and put together books like this one. Tracy's is going to be a little bigger than that one. There's so many little things to address. So, but I sure appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
That was a great history.
I'm sure that I've only talked when you write on some days, especially in tracing structure for everyone, as a matter of fact. Prestige was very important to Bill, and it was one of the things that was troublesome. Prestige was important to him. He had his success at U.S. Synthetics. I found life getting too complicated for me, but I made a few bucks and had a simpler lifestyle. Dave wanted the freedom to create and develop and explore different approaches to management of life. He got that.
He's doing that.
Furthermore, he did it successfully. More credit to him. Tracy wanted a simpler life and a chance to pursue his achieving better recognition. He achieved that. Lewis got financial success, which was really important to him. It's one of those rare cases where everybody came out with what they wanted and needed. I guess even Tracy Jr., he needed enough money to not be responsive to anyone. And he got that.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah.
Not often in life that it works out that way.